Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we begin the show by taking a look at the Armistice Day blizzard of 1940. It took place in the Midwest region of the U.S. On Armistice Day. It happened on November 11th and kind of carried over through November 12th. A huge storm killed many people, including duck hunters along the Mississippi River. And I think the states most affected, probably Kansas, Wisconsin, probably into Michigan. Many people lost their lives in this. I think they called it a cyclonic blizzard. Tim Eisley knows for sure. He has a longstanding interest in this particular storm and some of the stories connected with it. Really pleased to have him with us today to talk about us. And Tim, thank you so much for stopping by today. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry. I'm happy to be here. Happy to talk about this interesting event.
A very interesting event. And you may, as you listen, you may have a relative who experienced this storm and has told stories about it, or maybe you have questions about the storm itself. I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Tim, you've long been interested in this storm. How did that interest develop?
Well, it started, Larry, because I came from a family of duck hunters. Mm-hmm. My father, my uncle, and my four brothers, and my dad and uncle were avid duck hunters, and we all grew up as avid duck hunters. So when we would be out in the marsh hunting, Dad would talk about this during the fall. So it interested me. And the interesting thing was that he was not out in that storm, but he was a student at the University of Wisconsin. And so that morning, he boarded the bus on Sherman Avenue with a short-sleeved shirt to take the bus down here to campus. And he was here during the day. And when he came home later that day, it was freezing. It had been raining, sleeting, and then snowing. And it was so cold that he said he wished he had had a coat on. So he remembered that day very well, but he wasn't out hunting. But he heard the stories then and knew that there were hunters who had been out and, who were trapped. The story, it's a fantastic story of this extreme weather event that really stopped hunters in their tracks. And I think one of the best pieces of prose was the late Gordon McQuarrie when he wrote about the Armistice Day storm. And if I can, I'd like to just read you a paragraph from the start of one of his articles.
That'd be great.
He said, "The winds of hell were loose on the Mississippi Armistice Day and night. They came across the prairies from the south and west, a mighty, freezing, invisible force. They charged down from the river bluffs to the placid stream below and reached with deathly fingers for the life that beat beneath the canvas jackets of thousands of duck hunters. And eventually, they will look back upon it as the year of the big wind. To such a futile phrase will come what now seems to be the greatest hunting season disaster in Northwest history, and perhaps the greatest in the country's history." So this was a really keystone event, and it affected so many people. There were an estimated, according to the Weather Service, 154 deaths across the nation, including 49 people, about half of whom were duck hunters in Minnesota, 13 died in Wisconsin, and 13 in Illinois, and 4 in Michigan. Some people were stranded in their cars. There were thousands of chickens, and they estimate millions of turkeys that died. It affected farmers. And, of course, this time of the year, we've had these storms. In 1975, November 10th was when the Edmund Fitzgerald was sunk on Lake Superior.
That's right.
And in 1913, on November 7th and 8th, three ships went down in Lake Superior. So we've had that sequence of events when the storm came across from Tacoma, came down through the central states, came up across Kansas and up to Wisconsin, and that's when it really changed. And again, hunters back then, if you realize some of the reasons that they were out, and because it was so warm, so they were out in shirt sleeves or just their canvas duck coat, so they really didn't have the insulation that we have today. And second, the weather was so mild back then. The weather had been mild, so a lot of guys were going out. And Armistice Day was a holiday.
Yeah.
Later on, President Eisenhower changed it to Veterans Day, but it was a holiday. So a lot of guys were out. They were hunting. And the weather had been so mild that they were out just with those canvas coats on, and they really didn't know that the storm was coming. And then there were no weather forecasts back then.
Yeah, not the same as today.
Exactly.
We'd know today.
Exactly. And the fact the weather service changed afterwards because of that, a lot of the weather forecasts here were coming out of Chicago, and they were closed at night. So after that, they changed the National Weather Service, and so they started using some of the regional centers. And if you think of it, back then the temperatures that day were up in the high 50s in the morning, but then they dropped. They brought rain, sleet, and snow, and then there were ferocious winds, and that's when guys got trapped out there.
Over 50 miles an hour, wasn't it?
50 miles an hour, exactly. When the storm got to Michigan, they said that there were some of the wind gusts there were 80 miles an hour. So yeah, wind gusts 40, 50, and the temperatures were 52 degrees Fahrenheit in La Crosse up in the morning, and they were down to 14 in the late afternoon. Madison, it was 52 in the morning, down to 14, and some got down to single digits. And these hunters who were out, they have fantastic stories, but unfortunately, a lot of these, like our World War II veterans, are passing away. Mm-hmm. So I've been able to locate and interview many of these hunters, that 2 to 3 dozen of the hunters that I've talked to, and many of them have passed away, but one of them, in fact, is Jim Bosani, who's still alive.
Yeah, I'm 90 years old.
Jim Bosani Sr. is 90 years old duck hunter from Monroe, Wisconsin. He was from La Crosse originally, and he hunted out of Goose Island, just south of La Crosse. And he told me when I interviewed him a few weeks ago that he was out. It was a bluebird day. In fact, I learned about him from a professional guide on the Mississippi, Todd Lensing, who knew Mr. Bosani, and he's a wonderful gentleman. But he told me that he and his dad had gone out to Goose Island, and they had their duck boat tied up along the shore. But his dad decided not to use the duck boat, which he said probably saved their lives. So instead, they used an aluminum fishing boat. So they went out around 3 o'clock in the morning on a five-horse motor. They started out from the landing, and made their way opposite of Brownsville, Minnesota. So they just had regular shirts on back then. He said it was warm. We were in our shirt sleeves, and so he even took their coats off when they got out there. But all of a sudden, in mid-morning, the wind shifted and all hell broke loose, is what he told me.
Mm-hmm.
He says my dad said, "Pick up the decoys and let's get out of here." So he said one of the interesting things were that the ducks were flying backwards. They were pushed back by the wind.
Oh.
They were trying to fly into the wind, and they were low, and they were all over the place. So it then started to rain, followed by sleet and snow, and he had lost his gloves, but he didn't tell his dad that. But his dad got into the boat, and his dad said for him to get on the oars while he tried to start the motor. And so they started out. He said his dad told him just to pull on the oars, which was good because it kept him warm. But the water was freezing on his hands. There was no way that his dad could control the direction because they just had to go with the wind. It was so strong. Jim told me, "I can remember going by one island and guys were standing with their duck boat tipped over as a windbreak. And they were yelling, but we couldn't hear them. There was nothing we could do with the strong wind. The wind was parallel with the ground and I could hardly see my dad in the back of the boat. The rain came down in sheets, and then it started to snow." So they eventually reached shore, but it was later in the evening, and it was dark. And they came in south of La Crosse, north of Stoddard. It was getting dark, and they were a long way from their car. So his dad left him by the boat. His dad went to get the car, and his dad came back and then had him. They got into the car, which is a 1938 Pontiac Chieftain. And upon reaching home, they warmed up with a hot bath, but his dad went back to help look for some hunters.
Oh man.
But it was a fantastic story, but Mr. Bosani survived.
What a wonderful story. We're talking with Tim Isley today about the Armistice Day storm. This year is the 75th anniversary of that storm, and certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Maybe you have questions or comments about it, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. And Betty in Oak Creek, we'll get to you in just a minute. There's a Facebook comment from Carol. "My dad was 12 growing up in Wabasha, Minnesota. He and his friends were out enjoying the day like everybody else, and he and my mom talked about the day the ducks flew and men died. All the time his father came out and brought him and his friends back to safety. He told them to put their feet in his footprints, and they made it home safely. I suppose it was in the snowstorm. He says, Carol says, we also grew up hearing about Max Conrad from Winona, Minnesota, who flew over the river dropping food and supplies until exhausted. They named the airfield after him, and you're certainly familiar with that story as well.
Exactly. We can talk about Max Conrad later on, because he was one of the heroes. He flew the next day, and he dropped supplies to people and helped point the way out for them. He was a wonderful person for what he did.
Betty in Oak Creek, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I'm almost 80 years old, and my mom used to always tell us about this on Armistice Day. And I grew up in Stearns County, Minnesota, and that was between Litchfield and Kimball and St. Cloud. And a lot of hunters went out that day, and so many never came back. And my dad was not a hunter, but he did, it got so bad, and the kids always walked to school. And my two older brothers were the two in school, and it was so bad that my dad went out to get them with the horses and the sled. And I guess they did make it back, but seems as though the sled got stuck, and it was a terrible, terrible problem getting back to the house. And I said, well, that would have been about two miles that the school was located. But there were a lot of people, even in Stearns County in the Kimball area, that did lose their lives because they had gone duck hunting as well.
Yeah.
It was just tragic.
Very tragic. Very tragic. Thank you so much, Betty, for calling. Appreciate it. And so it hit a lot of rural people. And the snow she's talking about, wasn't there, I don't know, 20 inches of snow or something like that?
Yes, in some places, especially in Minnesota, and they were hit really hard. They had a lot more deaths there. And the farm animals, a lot of them died. And people, some of the cars, there's photos on the Minnesota Historical Society site that shows some of the snow up almost to the roof of the cars. People just couldn't get around,
Oh, yeah. Betty, thanks so much for that story. I really appreciate it. And Gary and Ween, thank you for calling as well. Hi.
Great show, as always, Larry. My dad was born in 23 and passed away in 2005. And after World War II, there were 10 guys from Edgar. Most of them were veterans who built the cabin up in Forest County. And in 1960, I got to go up there for the first time. And on the wall, they had the old newspaper account of that storm. And like you started reading earlier, I just remember the headline, "When the Winds of Hell Something." And it just, I mean, I'm a kid and I was fascinated. Well, it turned out there was a gentleman from Edgar. His name was Richard Litke. Everybody called him Dick, and he was the barber in town. And he had been out in that storm. And I can remember talking to him, but I wish I would have paid better attention because back then, you know, you're sort of a kid. But
yeah.
But he told about being out in the storm, and I've just always been fascinated by weather, and that this was such a powerful thing that affected people that you knew.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for calling, Gary. Comment, Tim?
Well, he's exactly right, and it affected across the state of Wisconsin, so there were people in other areas also. But the Mississippi was one of the hardest hit because the river is so wide,
yeah,
and people were stranded out there. Another person I talked to who made the same point about the weather was David Fugina, who's an attorney in Fountain City. And he told about his father, Marvin Fugina, who was duck hunting across from Buffalo City. And David, Marvin has passed away, but David told me, he said, remember the weather forecasts were not like they are today, and people went out unprepared for the impending storm. So Marvin, who unfortunately passed away in 1988, was in a double-bowed duck skiff in the Buffalo City area, and he paddled out to an island, and he shot a bunch of ducks, but he stayed too long because the birds were on the move. Birds were flying all over. The duck hunters had fantastic shooting. They were so low, and there were so many of them. And so finally, all of a sudden, the wind was so strong, he decided he had to get back in. So Marvin Fugina tied his gun and decoys to the side of the boat and had to cross open water. Three times he was thrown out of the boat, and twice he crawled back in and continued paddling towards shore. The third time, he didn't have the strength to get back in again, and he hung onto the boat, and the wind and the waves took him to shore, David told me. Upon reaching the shore, then, his clothes were frozen stiff on him, and he made it up to the bank and across the road, and there was a woman, Mrs. Reedy, who knew that hunters were out, and she had a pot of coffee on ready for anybody who made it in. He made it to her house, but his clothes were frozen, and he had to walk sideways to get into the house. She poured coffee for him, and as he shivered and warmed up. Another Buffalo County person who was also new was Harold Hetrick. Harold was used to be the assistant chief warden of the Wisconsin DNR.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Harold grew up in Buffalo County, and Harold told me about going down to the shore when Mr. Fugina came in, and he was covered with ice like a popsicle. And Harold, unfortunately, also has passed away.
Yeah.
But you can hear his story by going onto the web and typing in Harold Hetrick Armistice Day story. And you will get his story, and you can hear his voice. Harold was a wonderful person. He was in school back then, so he wasn't out hunting. But he told me about going down to the shore and seeing these people. He was a wonderful guy.
What a great guy. I knew Harold pretty well myself. And these are all great stories. And we have callers online. There's a line open for you yet at 800-642-1234. Rich and Merrill and John and La Crescent, we'll get to you in just a minute. But I want to remind you all that you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer. Tim Isley, our guest. Right now, we're talking about the weather. 75 years ago, 75th anniversary of the Armistice Day storm, with our guest Tim Isley, full-time freelance writer and photographer. Great to have him with us. And certainly, if you have a question, join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. If you have an old photo from that time, we'd love to have that posted on our Facebook page as well. Rich and Merrill, thanks for waiting.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
I write an editorial comment for an EAA chapter. It's for pilots.
Yeah.
And I may be repeating something that Tim already mentioned about Max Conrad.
Yeah.
Max, it's hard to imagine. I'm a pilot also. It's hard to imagine Max taking a Piper Cub up in that kind of wind and low visibility and the temperatures. For one thing, the Piper Cubs weren't the most powerful airplane. They had no cabin heat. And then to carry the supplies that he was using and dropping to the duck hunters, just really, really hard to imagine that kind of flying in those conditions. Max, after the storm and through the rest of Max's career, he went on to set any number of aviation records. So, guy's pretty super pilot.
Oh, that's a great story, Rich. Thanks so much. And Tim, as well, the airport is an airport's named after him, right?
Exactly, yes.
So.
In Winona, they named the airport after him. Max was such an interesting person. I think he was 37 years old when that happened. And he became inspired by flights of Charles Lindbergh. And he bought his first plane back in 1928. And I had talked to a historian in Winona, Bill Cool, who had a website. So I went up there and visited that and had a chance to see the airport up there. And Cool was telling me that that day, Conrad took out the Piper Cub. He got it out of the hangar, and he had five people holding down each wing in the strong winds to get ready to take off in about 60-mile-an-hour winds.
Huh.
And he flew over the backwaters of the Mississippi River looking for hunters who were stranded. And then he returned to the airport to refuel, and he flew the rest of the day and part of the next, throwing out supplies and guiding rescue boats to stranded hunters. Well, one of his daughters, Jana Conrad Costco, lives down in Arizona, and I had a chance to talk with her. And she was only 5 years old at the time, but she said she remembers him coming in intermittently during the day. He'd go back out to the airport, and he dropped a lot of blankets, maps, food, and things like that, and tried to lead the hunters out. It was a wonderful thing. And afterwards, he was recognized by their state assembly in Minnesota, in the Minnesota Junior Chamber of Commerce, and he later promoted flying across the United States, and he flew nonstop from New York to Paris. He was a fantastic person, and what an interesting guy he was.
Yeah. Rich, thanks a lot.
Yeah, he was indeed. Pretty heroic pilot.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you again for calling. And John in La Crescent, let's turn to you next. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I wrote a book about the Armistice Day storm. It is called Wings in the Wind. I grew up in Winona, and my father was out in the storm, so I used him as a main character. But I learned a lot while researching for that book. A lot of what you've already talked about with Max Conrad, John Bean, his co-pilot, who I believe is still living over by in the Winona area. I ran upon, just in doing some research, a lot of people in the area, such as Dick Weiss, who I hope is listening right now. He, I think, lost a couple relatives in the storm, and he's in La Crosse. Sonny Ehlers out of Winona, who just recently passed away and was a good neighbor and family friend of mine. And so I've enjoyed listening to some of these stories. I've done some presentations about the Armistice Day storm in the past, and I have a couple coming up. November 11th, I'm at the Historical Museum in La Crosse, right on Riverside, at 5:30. November 12th, I'm in Elma at 7 o'clock that night, all about the Armistice Day storm. So some of these areas are historical societies are, you know, honoring the 75th anniversary of this. November 19th, I'm at the Winona Historical Society that evening at 7 as well.
Well, I thank you very much for calling, John. Appreciate it. And this gives us an you're absolutely right. There are some nice remembrances coming up in ceremonies.
Right. I was going to mention that John Steffes is going to be at the Buffalo County Historical Society remembering the storm. He's at the Alma Theater on November 12th at 7 p.m. And then another one, though, it's also going to be held in Ferryville. And the Ferryville Tourism Council is coordinating a commemoration on Tuesday, November the 10th, at 10 a.m. in Ferryville. And they're going to do this right on the main street on Highway 35, right where there's a little pull-off there, and they're going to be putting up a special sign commemorating the event right in the village of Ferryville, and then they're going to have a lunch to follow down in the village hall. And Joanne White is putting that together because so many people were out of Ferryville. In fact, one of the people that I could talk about is the late Bill Shear. Bill was from Madison, and he loved to hunt ducks. And he said he'd never forget that storm. He says, Bill told me, he said, I saw the entire flight of northern ducks go down the Mississippi River that day. He said, but I'll tell you, that was the worst night I've ever spent in my life. And that includes a few long nights on the front lines in Germany during World War II. So he began the day in short-sleeve weather. He says it was almost 50 degrees that morning, warm with a slight drizzle. We overslept and were late getting out on the river. We were taken out about 9 a.m. by a guide service from the local fish market for $1 per hunter. And this was out of Ferryville. He says we hunted a small grassy island, and that day the ducks really flew. The sky was practically solid with ducks from bluff to bluff. I didn't think there were that many ducks in the world, he told me. But they knew what was coming. So Shear and two other hunting partners, Ole Severson and John Bailey, were out hunting, and they ran out of shells. The shooting was so good, which caused Severson to return to shore for more shells. And Shear joked later, told me that Bailey's decision to stay out there with him was the worst decision that Bailey had ever made. So Shear recalled that the wind increased and the temperature plummeted, and a noticeable change came around 3 p.m. The wind was so strong then that Severson couldn't return to Shear and Bailey. We had a small skiff out on the island, so we turned it over against a stump to get some protection from the wind, he said. We crawled under the boat to spend the night. It was the only thing we could do. The wind was ferocious, and we knew we were in trouble with the temperature dropping so quickly. Severson tried to contact authorities when he was in town. He even tried to contact Winona to try and get a rescue launch out to reach his partners, but the wind prevented all of the attempts. He even offered $1,000 reward to anyone in the town of Ferryville who'd be able to go out and get the hunters off the island, but to no avail. Nobody could get out there. And Shear told me he was wearing a wool shirt, hunting coat, and hip boots, but he had nothing heavy on, and because that morning was so warm. During the peak of the storm, he saw two men from Janesville pass by him in a canoe trying to make it to shore. But halfway in, they were swamped, and neither man survived. And that was Kenneth McFarland and Norm Schiffelbein, who were deceased. They were from Janesville. Ken McFarland ran the McFarland Pheasant Farm down in Janesville. Those were two of the people who died in the Ferryville area. So then Scheer told me, he said that the river froze in patches that night. We knew if we went to sleep, we would die. So we had to stay awake and keep talking in order to hang on. It's hard to describe, but you shiver so hard that you actually have to stop and rest. People may think I'm crazy, but it was so cold that the field mice that lived on the island that night crawled up on us for warmth. So Scheer and Bailey made it through the night, and by morning the wind had stopped. The telephone lines were down due to wind and ice, and Madison radio stations broadcast that hunters had died on the river, causing Scheer's parents to think that he too was dead. Using the small skiff, Scheer and Bailey were able to make it to shore about 7 o'clock, and they were met by a crowd of onlookers. He said our feet were frozen like stumps, and after an initial examination by a doctor, I think they actually took him into a bar in Ferryville, they put him up on the bar, and they examined him there, and then they were rushed to St. Francis Hospital in La Crosse, where probably the help there saved John's feet, he said. The doctors put grease on her feet and immobilized Bailey's feet in glass-like boots, which helped the circulation. I couldn't feel anything in my feet for 6 weeks. And after that experience, Scheer, and this is the same thing that Jim Bosani told me, he said he warned hunters to take plenty of warm clothes and always be prepared. And Mr. Bosani always takes a sack of warm things out there, and Scheer did the same things. He said it was a freak storm. We were caught out on a treacherous piece of water, but I was a young lad of 17 then and figured I had plenty of years of hunting ahead of me, so I couldn't give up that night.
Oh, that's a great story. Tim and John, again, thank you for your comment about your book that you wrote as well. I want to give Judy and Lafarge a chance to join in. Judy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello, Larry. Hello, guest. I'm so happy to talk to you both. So I have recently moved to Lafarge and work in an assisted living home where my favorite, well, one of my favorite gentlemen just passed away. He was 97. And Bob would tell me a story about what happened when he was not a hunter. He was a farmer just the side of Viroqua. And he said that he had gone out to do what he was doing in the fields, realized the weather was just really getting bad, and by the time he could get home, his wife's favorite chickens were frozen to the ground in the yard.
Wow.
Literally frozen to the ground, and he had never seen anything like that. He was not somebody that talked baloney, and he was a straight-shooting man. And as I just get goosebumps as I'm hearing you folks, because I didn't connect that it was that storm. It was the right age that he told me and how old he was and what happened that day. So, yes, his chickens in his different fall just froze right to the yard.
Oh, boy.
Exactly. I had once heard of somebody who said that he had talked to his father who claimed that actually ducks were falling out of the sky frozen. It was so cold that some birds were falling out of the sky.
Yes, but he'd never seen the likes of it. Yeah. But thank you, folks.
Yeah, thanks, Judy, for calling. Appreciate your call.
I think one of the interesting things, Larry, is the fact that it was so strong. A couple of interesting little facts are that the winds actually blew the water offshore on Lake Winnebago and on Green Bay about 400 feet. So there were some hunters who were hunting out of blinds, and the storm came in, and they fell trapped in their blinds, and they didn't realize that later on they could actually walk to shore because it had actually blown the water 400 feet and exposed some things in the bottom that hadn't been seen before. Another interesting thing is that there was a weather observer from UW-Madison on the UW campus who had taken off that day to go duck hunting, and he got stranded out of the Lake Mendota. And so here he was out there hunting, and he was on a little island, and he wasn't able to get back and had to spend, I think, the night out there. But people just didn't know that the storm was coming. And the UW football team was coming back. They had played out in Columbia, out in New York, and they were coming back on the train back then. And their train, because a lot as the storm went east, a lot of the telephone wires and poles were down over the tracks, and they were delayed, and they didn't get in until a day later here in Madison.
Oh, man. Well, Judy, thank you again for your call, and Let's go to Jan in Winona, Minnesota next. Jan, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, yes, and thank you for taking my call. My father was in that storm, and I just want to say hello to John. He's was our neighbor, and thank you for mentioning my father's name, Sonny Ehlers. In fact, I got a little teary-eyed when I heard my dad's name mentioned. But my father, and I forgot who was with them, they had to push-pull to an island, and that was your old-fashioned long stemmed push-pole with like a duckbill at the end.
Yeah.
And they had to chop ice to get back to Buffalo City. So as your guest mentioned, some of these towns, like good old Buffalo City and Fountain City, they barely made it back. And I know my dad went out the next day, and he said it was the saddest thing to see frozen duck hunters brought back and their dogs, too. It was just a day they'll never forget. And the story about Max Conrad, that is very, very true, the type of plane that he did fly, because those were stories that my parents would share with us.
Well, Jan, thank you so much. I think Jim in La Crosse has a story that might relate to what you have to say, so let's go there. Jim in La Crosse, thanks for calling. Hi.
Yes. Yes, this is Jim in La Crosse. I'm 92 years old, and I remember that story that day very well. My brother, I didn't hunt that day because I thought the weather was too nice, what we duck hunters call a bluebird day.
Yep.
But my brother and his pal, Laverne Reber, decided to hunt. So they went out about noon with their dog and a hunting skiff. They drove up to Bryce's Prairie and hunted out in Lake Onalaska. That evening, of course, the wind came up, the storm came up, and they didn't come home. So my dad and I drove up to Bryce's Prairie and found their car, and we knew they were out in the lake. So we came home, and we got a 16-foot Thompson boat that Dad had, and we went up there, and we tried to launch that boat, and the waves were so high, and the wind was so strong that we couldn't launch. So we sat in our cars all night and waited till morning. In the morning, we the lake had frozen over, so we attempted to get out there, and in the attempt, I fell through the ice, and that was in the morning, and that ended my my attempt at any rescue. They took me back and warmed me up. But my dad and my uncle and several other fellows managed to walk on the ice about 11 o'clock in the morning and pushing a hunting skiff ahead of them. And they got out to the island where the boys were. So they brought them in. It was about noon the following day before they got in. Laverne Reber had separated from my brother Dick and gone on to another island. Luckily, neither one of them tried to make it back that night, or they would have drowned.
Yeah.
So Laverne had the hunting skiff. He turned that up and managed to get a little bit of shelter. My brother Dick was on an island with the dog, and he had no shelter, a light hunting jacket, and what he did, he ran all night around a circle to keep warm. I credit his survival to the fact that he was 17 years old and could do that. But
my friend, the late
both boys were rescued the next day around noon, and none of them suffered any frozen feet, or which I thought was wonderful.
Yeah.
And they made it back okay.
Wow.
My friend, the late Bud Hendrickson, told me about that, and Bud knew them, and I think he had mentioned to me that when they went around that tree, they made an actual circle into the ground, and they beat the snow down, and but they stayed alive, and that a lot of the people, they stayed active. Some of them actually tried to fight each other, to hit each other, just to keep the circulation going, because they had to do that. And when one of the other callers talked about everything being frozen, I had talked to several people who were with the old Wisconsin Conservation Department, Art Emke, who was the district director up in Eau Claire, Dick Hunt, who used to be the waterfowl biologist at Horicon. Dick was out down around Lake Wingra, outside of Madison and Lake Wabisa, and they saw birds that were trapped in the ice. At Art Emke, actually, he got sent by the director, I think it was Ernie Swift, up to Fish Lake up in Dane County, and they were told to rescue ducks, and they just went out, and all there were bumps on the ice with a little air hole, and these ducks were trapped and frozen into the ice. So they had to crawl out there, and they chopped the ducks out, and then they brought them back, and they took them to what was called a game farm at Poinette and survived. So fascinating stories that took place back then.
Oh, absolutely. Jim, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call. So there's another kind of firsthand story. Still a few people, not very many, left that can tell those stories. And I remember some individual stories about guys who actually got under their boat with their dog and clung to their dog to keep warm and were able to survive by holding on to their dog.
Right, the warmth of the dog helped them, so they had to stay active, or they had to cling to something with warmth. Actually, other people tried to burn their decoys. They had their wooden decoys, so they put their wooden decoys together and poured some gasoline over it and lit that, trying to light a fire for some warmth. And some people actually had some fire for warmth, but the wind was so strong, and it was this combination of the rain and the sleet and the snow, and then that strong wind, and the ducks kept flying. It must have been fantastic to see all of these ducks, but when that thing hit, it just must have really impacted people, and they didn't know what to do. And then they forgot about, hey, I've got to get out of here. And then by then it was too late.
Well, this has been fascinating, Tim, and I know you give talks on this, and you give other talks as well. I know you have you talk to civic and conservation groups pretty often about, well, I know one, From Weeds to Wildflowers on Gobbler Ridge, which is your home. That is the land management you've done in Crawford County. Amazing, and
thank you.
I know that Ding Darling is also a guy that you...
One of my conservation heroes, and so I have a PowerPoint presentation on Ding Darling, the fantastic conservation programs he came up with, and the federal duck stamp, and so civic and conservation groups that are interested, I'd be more than happy to give that, and also talk a little bit about Armistice Day. So thank you, Larry.
Yes, and Tim, and if you go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, you can just comment or contact us through there, or just email us, and we can put you on to Tim if you would like to talk with us some more about his presentations. And a fantastic, amazing story about death and some, fortunately, many survivals, too, during that Armistice Day storm 75 years ago this year. Coming up, we're going to talk about the weather that's more current with our guest, our weather guy, Steve Ackerman. That's next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.